Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Four Center is the Bad Batch Report. I was waiting to see if there would be music, but instead we were treated to a lovely baby dragon cry.
A hungry baby dragon cry.
A hungry baby dragon. That describes, I think, both of us today, probably, as we record on this Friday morning. We are a hungry baby dragon. So let's have a fun discussion of Bad Batch and then eat some capacitors. I am Joseph Scrimshaw, and the person who excellently portrayed the hungry baby dragon is Ken Napsok.
Yes, I am indeed. I love when a good animal munches on metal in Star Wars.
There's a lot of good quality metal munching. If you like metal munching, this was the episode for you. Let's get right into it. We've really been enjoying Bad Batch. It seems so far that the Star Wars community that I'm seeing on social media is really enjoying Bad Batch. So that is a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Yeah.
We are talking about the third episode entitled Replacements. It is written by Matt Michenowitz and directed by Nathaniel Villanueva. More practice for me saying the name of the director, because that is somebody who directed a lot of Clone Wars episodes, so I've said that name a lot. 27-minute episode, that seems to be the standard, kind of about half hour-ish.
Yeah.
Ken, any thoughts so far?
Let me tell you something. I have some thoughts. I was relieved because I did the stay up to midnight thing and got up early, whereas last week I was like, you know what, maybe I don't need to stay up to midnight. Maybe I'll watch both episodes right before we review it. And I stayed up to midnight, and then I saw the 27 minutes, and I went, ah, that's a comforting length. I can get to bed on time.
I'm so glad to add our bed report to our Bad Batch report. Yes, I once again took an 11:30 nap on the couch and then like startled awake my internal clock that it's late night Thursday into Friday. It must be time to watch some Star Wars.
Yeah.
Just magically woke up at 12:02 with a start and watched this great episode, and then watch it again in the morning with the subtitles, which in some ways is my favorite viewing experience. Let's talk about our overall reactions. Did you love this episode, like it, struggle with it? What were your big picture thoughts?
Oh, man, I really like this one. And it's interesting because I'm really enjoying the serialized nature of the Bad Batch versus, as we talked in the past, Clone Wars is so big and sprawling, and it's more about arcs versus every episode connecting him, and this is a different experience. So on one hand, I got a little bit of that, you know, I don't use or believe in that word filler, but I got that like, oh, I can't wait till they get to something big, right? I can't wait to build and build and build. But I really loved living in this episode. It was the dark tones with powerful, with the purpose to the darkness, and then powerful sentimentality. It was episode about kind of life and death, a little bit of yin yang, seeing two squads deal with how they deal with what's going on in two different ways. And I was kind of affected by the end. I think as I've seen, even our Force Center Discord, that end really was sweet. But powerful, that term powerful is going to come up a lot because like Wrecker, really effective episode. I really love this one.
Yeah, I like the way you're focusing on the yin yang, and that's great to hear that fans in our Discord are already talking about that end, because that end is pretty powerful to me, because it is kind of just making the promise of that Star Wars phrase, you know, powerful light, powerful dark, and kind of demonstrating the idea of balance. Because sometimes moments like that of, oh, hey, the gruff, war-torn soldiers made a nice home for the kid. That's something especially like for people our age, Ken, who grew up with a lot of television that was a little bit safer and a little bit more like, let's be wholesome all the time. We can sometimes push back against that. But it doesn't feel at all saccharine because it is the balance to the horror in the rest of this episode, right?
Absolutely. Well said. We're going to talk about some of those moments, but those are some of the moments of Crosshair were some of the best I've seen in Star Wars for being pretty damn serious. And that made this more powerful, and it starts funny. And we've already seen kind of Wrecker and Omega kind of having this fun, almost brother, older brother, younger sister relationship where Hunter's maybe more the father or whatever you might want to say. And it started like, oh yeah, he built a nice thing. And it just was really well directed, well shot, well everything about it. I mean, it seemed live action in its way, and which speaks to the power of Star Wars animation, by the way. But yeah, I think you're right. It just built it all up so well.
Yeah, I really like this episode. I've been enjoying all of them. I felt like the previous episode was Bad Batch sort of acknowledging the absolute need for a new normal, with Hunter in particular getting that advice from Cut LaQuane that, well, if you want to make it in this new reality, you have to be willing to change. And that episode was a little bit of an acceptance of change. So then this is felt like adjusting to it. What does that mean? And I think that theme is going to continue. I think it's fascinating to have this sort of continuing story, and we'll see how this develops, because it feels like there was actually a lot of forward movement. A lot of pieces got put into the place.
Totally.
But I think sometimes that temptation to go like, oh, but what's going on? How much story did I really get comes from the agency of the main characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very curious to see if we're going to get to a point where we're going to have the Bad Batch themselves, Hunter and crew, you know, really go, all right, here's our mission. Here's what we're choosing to do next right mm-hmm. now. Because right now they're still scrambling and they're just trying to, you know, get rid of problems, the immediate yeah. problem, rather than having like a, all right, now we've made a choice. Here's where we're going.
Yeah. I mean, their storyline was effectively like a classic bottle episode for me. Stranded, got to get out and figure it out. And I can't wait till they're really out into the galaxy. But at the same time, I can wait. I'm really enjoying the slow burn here. I'm right there with you on what you're talking about there with them taking, getting their mission, getting their purpose.
Yeah. And I think what I liked about this episode is it really put a lot of cards on the table as possibilities for what that big picture is going to be. This episode did not feel like, they're just going to run into kind of problems for a while. It mm-hmm. felt like this is, there's a real big picture possibilities for what their mission is, right? It feels like justice for Crosshair, going back for Crosshair is a real possibility. It feels like the threat of yeah. one of them or all of them being captured and taken back to Kamino is a real threat. Mm-hmm. It feels like the truth of the inhibitor chips is a mission that they might go on. The future of kind of the rest of the clones seems like that's going to be a backbone of the season. So I felt like this episode told a nice, simple story, a kind of a bottle episode, as you're saying, for the actual Bad Batch.
Yeah.
A simple story, but it laid out lots of different very high agency things that could be happening mm-hmm. to move the big picture season, the big picture story forward.
Yeah.
So I like that it was a simple story with a lot of complex ideas about change in particular and possibilities of where that might go in the future.
I love what you're saying here, because that, you know, we love our big themes here in Forza. We love digging in that. We love good plot. We love good, just, oh my gosh, that what's going to happen next. And you're right. The tech with the building the scanner, Wrecker with his head hurting, Lama Sue, I don't know which way he's going. Am I rooting for him, or is he just a shrewd businessman that wants to stay, keep his contract? I don't know. And you're, it's right. Literally, it's like a game of solitaire. All the cards are in front. I just find the right one to put down. And that in itself is very fun and makes a serialized version of that Clone Wars we're so used to. This is a different kind of way to just deal out the story. I love it. Love that you said that.
Yeah. And all of the different kind of plot threads that were potentially laid out in this great game of solitaire, they all fit under the big umbrella of who were the clones, who are the clones going to be, mm-hmm. and really a continuation of the Clone Wars, giving individuality and agency and purpose to the clones. That story is really continuing, because all of these things are about what it means to be a clone.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And just that whole thing, you know, you go through all of the war to find yourself, and now you already got people going, oh, clones.
What a problem. Last kind of big picture thing for me that I wanted to highlight is there's some great Clone Wars continuation in that the Clone Wars animated series pulled from lots of different genres of adventure serial and pop culture. But this really drew, like Clone Wars often did, from, I would say, just straight up horror movie vibes. Mm-hmm. Echo's search for the Ordo Moon Dragon, when it initially was appearing, was just kind of classic horror movie stuff. Omega in the Tunnels, the horror of the Imperial attack on Onderon, all of it had some good horror movie vibes to me.
Yeah, I mean, really, the Onderon one, I didn't really think about that. It's the old monster in the woods where you're packing up your campsite. I mean, and I don't mean that totally whimsical, because it's so dark, but yeah, I like that. Yeah, and even Omega sitting in the cockpit, and you're like, this is going to be a Leia Minock callback, and it still gave me a little jump, so good stuff.
It still worked. Yeah, and the way they were cut together to compare and contrast was great. Yeah. And I also just think that we have often noted, as many fans have, that while Clone Wars is absolutely for 12-year-olds of all age, it gives you a literal moral at the beginning. If you're a younger person watching it and trying to figure out life, it gives you some ideas of how to handle life. And then it brutally slaughters people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rebels, I think, had a softer touch mm-hmm. on the violence. This seems to be that Bad Batch is roaring back to go, yeah, no. There's going to be death and darkness again.
Yeah. No, and effectively, you know, I'm not rooting for a bunch of dark, gritty violence in Star Wars, but in telling that moral fable, it when it's used right, it can really affect you, and this one did.
Yeah, it just seems like it is very much an effective decision to not back off on the truth of the horror of the Empire, but then to balance that out by showing us the humanity and kindness and growth of the Bad Batch.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into big themes. What ideas did you feel were at stake in this episode, Ken?
So I'm going to lay down my cards on this solitaire game, but it's double solitaire.
I like playing solitaire with you. It's great.
And then maybe we can kind of see where you want to go here, because I also think this episode introduces a big theme that we're not yet dealing with yet. But like you said, it's also plot. Hey, what's coming? And themes. Hey, this is coming. I looked at compassion and understanding, and that showed up a lot for me. And understanding those you're showing compassion to more than just being compassionate and that kind of stuff. Acceptance, would you kind of talk about last week, was the talk of the change, and this is the change, and also belonging here. And that to me was a little bit of Omega, not versus Crosshair, but the Omega on one side and Crosshair on the other, of both of them kind of dealing with belonging or not belonging. And then there's putting faith in others versus forcing their will into alignment. We can talk about that big one. And then the final one, Joseph, and then we can dive into where you want to go here. It's, I really think this is introducing the big question of forgiveness with the Crosshair stuff. I love the exchange with, you can't blame Crosshair. And then Wrecker's kind of like, well, so he didn't do it. And then Tech just goes, well, and Hunter's like, we can't debate this now.
Yes. Let's put a pin in that, because I think that's one of the big things that was going on in this episode that felt like it was being set up for. This is a concern of the larger story of wrestling with the reality of the clones.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. First, I want to go back to something that you said earlier. I think for me, this episode really locked into place and locked into my heart toward the end. When we got to see that compare and contrast of Crosshair and Omega both at home, you know?
Yeah.
I think the episode was dealing really fair with its themes by putting one of the main ones in the title.
Yes.
This idea of replacements, you know, that this is an era of change, right?
Mm-hmm.
That suddenly the Clone Wars is over. The Republic has become the Empire, and it's making you feel like everybody in the galaxy has to face change and possibly being replaced or displaced or figuring out kind of what their new home is.
Yeah.
And I loved how much within all the other themes, that was just extremely literally what everybody was dealing with, right?
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the Bad Batch was wrestling with, okay, Omega is our responsibility, and she really wants to be a part of the squad. Not just she's under our care and we have to protect her. She wants to be a part of the family unit, and she wants to be a part of like the squad of our operations, of going on missions. Bad Batch is also wrestling with the loss of Crosshair. And, you know, this idea that the title invites you, like, Omega isn't a replacement for Crosshair.
Right.
But is that how Bad Batch is feeling, you know, that her presence is making them aware that Crosshair isn't there? And you get that great contrast where Crosshair is getting these sort of new Stormtrooper squad members, and that is not as happy or flowing as the addition of Omega to Bad Batch.
Yeah.
And then we get the establishment of what appears to be kind of the new big bad for the Bad Batch, because I would say Tarkin is a bigger bad,
right.
But specifically to be the enemy of the Bad Batch, Vice Admiral Rampart, in his push to replace the clones with stormtroopers. So there's all this literal replacement going on.
Yeah.
But then I feel like the real emotional heart of that is about all of these ideas of home. Mm-hmm. And that's to me where all these other great ideas that you talked about start to pop out about empathy and you know, really truly caring about others and making choices based on compassion. Those images toward the end where Crosshair seems depressed to be back in the barracks, and the signs of life are there, but there's no life there. or almost like the music notes are there, but there's no song, you know?
Totally.
To see everything that got established of like, wow, the Bad Batch in the pilot, the Bad Batch is vital. And those marks on the wall mean something. That's a point of pride. They went out and had a mission that they believed in and they accomplished it. Right. And, you know, Crosshair is not marking anything on the door now.
Yeah.
In direct contrast to Omega's new room, which is, you know, just, it looks like an indie bookstore, right? It's it's got the nice curtains and the lights and the Lula, the Tuca doll, right?
Yeah.
It's just so, all the warmth that was in the barracks on Kamino is now on that ship.
Transferred over. Yeah, absolutely. I felt that Omega was, you know, already part of the squad in the way that we addressed last week, but this was the episode symbolized the true acceptance of it and the true the valuing her worth and her kind of getting that boost of confidence just on a simple level and the way she approached and just kind of, and because she's this character that's kind of like, well, no, that was the mission, right? Like, I did the mission. I didn't question it. I'm here. I belong here. And it was for them to accept that and for them to put faith in her. That was extra powerful for me on that side. And the crosshair moment was really affecting because we're going to get into the bigger questions of how much is it his fault? How much is the chip just pulling on what might be there for him or what he's working through? I don't know those answers yet. But when I saw him sitting there kind of, you know, sulking, it's like, yeah, there's something in there that, the chip can't clear. The chip can't fix. There's something about Crosshair who's in there knowing he doesn't belong.
Just that sad body language suggested that, yeah, whatever fulfillment he used to feel when he returned from a mission was not there, right? That there was something lifeless about him.
Right. Totally. Totally.
Yeah. And I like that these themes of kind of home and displacement even went beyond this great compare and contrast of Omega and Crosshair of even the story with the beast, the Ordo Moondragon, which yet another very clear choice to not murder a beast in the Star Wars tradition. It seems like the creators are really aware of that concern that the Ordo Moondragon's story ultimately was like, look, I'm just getting some takeout food and I want to go home and eat it. That's my whole deal. You know, yeah. The fact that it was the Ordo Moondragon at home, ultimately, that Omega faced is another reminder of this idea of everybody just wanting a sense of place and safety in their home.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other literal plot thread is what's going on with Saw's people. It's really pointed out to us that a bunch of them are just refugees, just people displaced from their home looking for a safe place to live. Mm-hmm. And I think even if you don't like intellectually pick all these things apart, the fact that you're seeing images of wanting to be safe and at home, like the Ordo Moondragon and the refugees just trying to find another home, I think those themes or those images, those ideas all being there give even more power to the comfort of seeing Omega's home at the end of like, yes, this is what we all want, is that safety and that comfort.
Well, just so well said on this. It's, I don't want to call it the hidden theme. It's all through it, but you know, I'm focusing on those other things, but it all kind of belonging, acceptance, all funnel into this idea of home. And not to sound like a Edward Sharpe in the Magnetic Zero song, but home is wherever I'm with you. It is just, it's really powerful. I'd love bringing up the dragon and its home and Omega doesn't say it, you know, it's not over the top and on the nose like, oh, this is your home. But you can tell that's what's going on. You can tell it's similar to Rey on Passana with the big old snake. It's a theme and it's big. And I'm enjoying that Star Wars right now is being aware of how many animals there are and creatures that we don't want killed. I enjoy it a lot.
Yeah. And like, look, a creature is going to kill you. A classic great moment of self-defense. I just like that it is being a little bit more thoughtful about it. Right.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. And just like it was this big, you know, for Omega, this big moment of can I, should I? It was really just like, oh, I don't need to. Mm-hmm. That's not the solution here. And that was nice.
Yeah. Very clear. Very, very well. Very well done.
Do you want to get into these big themes that you were talking about of kind of choice versus mindless obedience?
Yeah. Like I said, to me, the little work, I approach it from, you know, putting faith in others versus forcing their will. And I'll start with this. It's really interesting. It's like Rampart, named after the controversial LAPD division, I think. It almost like he listened to Force Center and said, hey, guys, there's some themes of choice, and choice is powerful. So I'm going to take that theme and I'm going to apply it to here. Because he starts from like, you know, you hear him, you're like, look, soldiers signing up in their own will is going to be a better test of their loyalty than clones who are forced in a way. And then jump cut out of order in the episode, jump cut to that one Imperial stormtrooper going, I just need a job, money, and they treat me better than the Republic, which is kind of maybe a lie, but one that to him is the truth. So I just want to start from there, because then it's like he's twisting it, he's using it, and it's we always talk about light and dark, and Qui-Gon wants us to step towards that light, and this is someone taking the power of choice and really just going, yeah, and then we can enforce our will over the galaxy by enforcing our will over these troops.
Yeah, I thought there were a lot of themes of this, from Rampart making this argument to the whole clone question about how much is Crosshair responsible for his actions versus the inhibitor chip,
right?
And even down to, you know, Omega really gets to show her agency, right? She doesn't just say, let me be a part of the unit. She actively makes a choice to be a part of the unit, and then she actively makes choices in her mission. That her choice of not to just shoot the Ordo Moondragon in the face, but to realize that there was another way. You know, I like her line, don't worry, I didn't have to use it, about Hunter's blaster. So I think Omega supports these themes. We can talk more about Crosshair, but yeah, I do want to dive into the Rampart stuff and the ongoing clones versus stormtroopers story that is being told by Bad Batch, because that was really, really fascinating.
It was really fascinating. And a quick note on the Omega one. I love that line, because what Omega is just assuming with Hunter and all of them is like, right, we have these, but good thing we don't have to use them all the time. She's like, don't worry. Like I don't worry. I did what we were supposed to do. I didn't use it.
Yeah, which is really great. That's a great line. And I can't wait to see how we kind of follow up with it. Right.
Yeah,
if that was a line for us, it has a great sort of like just moral resonance of like, I found a better way out of it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot to it of, you know, Omega almost taking responsibility for Hunter's fear of her being in danger. Like, don't worry, I figured it out. I wasn't in any danger. I had your blaster. I could have used it. The clones versus the stormtroopers, man, that was some nice complexity, right? Mm-hmm. And again, like taking years of fan discussions and going, we're finally just gonna tell the story of clones versus stormtroopers. And yeah, the sort of cynical argument that Rampart is making is, we, if they choose to join, we can get them to do what we say on without question, right?
Yeah.
He says in particular, the loyalty of those who willingly enlist is what I see tremendous value in. And then for me, it's the smash cut to the new stormtrooper, not use that name. I believe ES-01 is the name of the trooper. Smash cut to him saying, forget our orders. This is wrong.
Yeah.
And refusing to just slaughter civilians, and instead say, we'll take them in for questioning. So it's very interesting the way it picks apart Rampart's argument. Rampart assumes that if people really, I guess, believe the Imperial propaganda and sign up, that they will just do the bidding of the Empire, because they see that, of course, the Empire is right. And then first, we get that line that you were talking about, with the Empire, I get paid, I get fed, and I have a roof over my head. More than Republic ever did for me, which seems more like, no, I'm making a personal choice to just kind of take care of myself.
Yeah.
I didn't sign up to do it to, without question, do horribly immoral things. I think what was interesting about that to me is it's Rampart is making the argument that, you know, if they willingly sign up, they will follow our will. And then we're seeing the truth that if we keep conditioning Crosshair and take his agency and his choice away, then we'll be able to get soldiers to do whatever we want.
Right.
So there's this great contrast for these active characters. But it also, to me, Ken, felt like a really big picture storytelling thing of the thing that fans have debated forever of how culpable are stormtroopers in the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And this felt like showing like, well, stormtroopers with a little bit more moral backbone probably got weeded out really quickly, like this guy did.
Yeah, I love the big picture implications of this and what this true transition means, because it starts a little bit of a cost-cutting measure, which is still prevalent. And there's that there. And I said this all, this faith in others and forcing their will thing also flowed into what I'm like the folly of hubris, which we've already been talking about in the show, of just the Empire was built to be destroyed from the beginning by people like Rampart being like, here's how this works. Here's how we're going to get there. We're going to get our way by getting them on board and taking away, you know, agency and will and whatever, and how it's already on shaky ground, which is good, by the way, because we're rooting for them to fall. But it's part of their it's Tarkin on the Death Star going, evacuate now in our moment of triumph. Boom. That's present from the beginning in this Empire, built on sand for sure. And that emerged to me, too, in these conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought that was all fascinating. Great stuff. Great potential big picture storytelling for how the stormtroopers evolve, you know, because there can be a picture of like, what? It's just like, you know, yeah, random teen from Corellia. But if they're being put through processes like people like Rampart are doing, where they absolutely grind any sort of humanity out of you, you know, and make you think you still have agency and choice. But really, ultimately, you're not, because you're trapped in the machinery. I feel like that's the beginning of the story being told.
Absolutely. And the hardening of the heart happens in a lot of different ways over different courses of time for individuals. And that's why you have your Bodhi Rooks. We always talk about, we love Bodhi, because it's like, I got to make things right, is what Galen told him. And that hit with him, and that hit home. And I love that there. And there was a little moment there when what's that droid? Is it AV many numbers?
AZ3, I think.
saying, I am compelled to follow your request, which was just this weird kind of thesis statement on, I have no choice. I have to follow this request, which is what many on right now that, quote unquote, that side are dealing with.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, that's a great yet another place that this idea is layered in of who gets to take responsibility for their actions, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the crosshair part of it. It's a pretty explicit opinion from both Tech and Omega that Crosshair is not responsible for his actions, that it is the chip basically forcing him to do something, do things that he otherwise would not do. Do you trust our narrators there? Do you trust our characters? Do you believe Tech and Omega?
I do to a point, meaning I touched on it earlier. I have no idea. This is just plot speculation or theme speculation of this idea of why did his chip kind of quote unquote work versus even before he got, you know, put under the tube there. And there was some stuff already happening. Right. And did that come from Crosshair? Was always kind of a toothpick and mouth grump, even going back to the Clone Wars season 7 stuff. And so is the chip just picking on what's there? And he's going to have to come to terms with maybe what was there, and can he grow, and can he find redemption from there? I don't know that answer. It's just, it's a answer we'll get maybe eventually. I'm fascinated with, he has done this stuff. And you got Wrecker going, yeah, that's right, he did shoot me. Still got to miss him, which is his version. Wrecker's already kind of in the land of forgiveness, where Hunter might not be, but Hunter also needs to forgive himself. He says, that's the big problem. I left him behind. I can't forgive that. So can he not, does he not feel he can go back to Crosshair? I don't know. Kylo and Leia comes to mind of that kind of stuff. So I love it all there. And I can't wait to find out more. That's why I loved the Crosshair in the barracks at the end, because it gave me hope that it's going to be something he fights against and can fight against. And then the big old theme of Star Wars redemption comes into play, but it's going to be built on forgiveness.
Yeah. This is just total headcanon for me about why maybe Crosshair's inhibitor chip worked a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is obviously, you know, Tech's building some answers for us, because he's building Tech to scan their inhibitor chips and find out exactly what's going on and, you know, why theirs didn't work. Omega does seem like she has actual answers and is like very straightforward of like, yes, no, they're meant to take your agency away and force you to do this. It wasn't his choice. Like, she's extremely direct.
Correct.
But for me, if there is like, okay, they're enhanced clones and they have a level of individuality beyond even all the clones who have agency, that makes their inhibitor chips not work when it tries to override their agency. If there's something about Crosshair where his specialty, his enhanced ability is to be violent from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
There's something just thematically great about that, of he is the one who can, from a very far distance, in a dispassionate way, it's just a heat signature, you know? And I point at it and it falls.
Mm-hmm.
That there's something in that, that is his personality, that is his agency, that made him more susceptible to the inhibitor chip working a little bit. And I like the way they told that in the pilot, that it seemed like it was working on him a little bit.
Yeah, just enough.
Enough for him to not question it and go like, what? Yeah, it's an order. I'm sure the Jedi did something. So let's just take care of it. It would be a different story if they left it at that. The story that we're dealing with is, it half worked, so put him in a machine and make it fully work and keep putting him back in that machine. It's much more of a Winter Soldier from MCU story of he had a little bit of proclivity to follow these orders and a little bit of a proclivity to just say good soldiers follow orders, period. But now we're going to make him believe that.
I love what you just said. Love everything you said there, but I love how you focused on you know, the violence from afar and seeing it through the scope, just seeing the infrared, because what was so effective for the execution of the refugees saw was trying to get out of there is the last look on their faces. It's something we don't see maybe a ton in Star Wars, which does have its fair share of violence, PG-13 that it might be at times. I personally was affected by upfront and personal seeing it. And that's why that trooper, you know, has the what I would say is the correct moral decision to be like, we're soldiers, not executioners. And it was so up in our faces. And I love that you talked about Crosshair is so used to it from a distance. That's important.
Yeah.
That's important.
Yeah. And maybe it opened him to it a little bit, but now that they are in his mind, taking away his agency, taking away his choice and forcing him to do this, then he, you know, there's no problem being up close, personal. Just follow orders. But then when he goes back to the barracks, you can definitely see something's missing. Something's not right.
Yeah, he doesn't belong here. It's not even about good job, good mission. Just like something's not right and this ain't my home. I love that.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you while we were talking about, choice and forgiveness and all those things and where we're going with the inhibitor chips. Did you feel like in this episode that Wrecker's head injury was just to keep him on the ship so he couldn't go punch out the Ordo Moondragon? Or did you feel like this was Wrecker's chip is going to go off?
I'll do a little column A, a little column B, because I think it was very effective. I love when Omega calls for help and no one even answers, right? So it's all her. So that was powerful. But yeah, I have there was a bit of that tension, and then now that tension will remain of something's just going to happen. And I don't even know that he's suddenly going to become, you know, I zombie, I will kill, you know, like I almost like it's going to go off, explode, cause internal. I had that kind of tension that was carrying. So I think that'll carry forward.
Yeah. It felt like it was underlined too much to not carry forward in some way.
Yeah, totally. But like any good writing, effective for this episode in that way.
Yeah. And I think tying that beat to the fact that tech is making a device to check on their own inhibitor chips and see exactly what the deal is. And I loved how scientific that was of, oh yeah, I know that's what it is, but I'm going to make a device to check because I am all about, science and data and facts.
Yeah, exactly.
It was very, very cool. One last thing that I wanted to talk about to follow up on something that you said is I love this idea of forgiveness because from Omega's perspective that she's sharing, and maybe Tech's science will back this up, they don't feel like Crosshair needs to be forgiven. It wasn't his choice, right?
Right.
And Hunter, I love that he turns it onto himself of like, I need to forgive myself for leaving him behind.
Yeah.
But if the question becomes, or the story becomes, we the Bad Batch think this was not our family member Crosshair's fault. We're going to go get him. We're going to go save him. We're going to give him his agency back. Is there going to be a point at which they question everything they've done in the Clone Wars, and they all question whether or not they are culpable for things they've done and whether or not they kind of have to forgive themselves for following the orders of the Republic?
Yeah, that's a great question, because this Star Wars redemption, it goes to the, you know, barroom conversations about Vader. You know, yeah, the point of that morality tale was his redemption, but he still did all that stuff. It's a big question. Perhaps maybe we all face at what point do you truly earn that redemption, and what is true forgiveness? I don't know. That's a big question, because it ties into maybe the Republic stuff and the view of what the Republic became and how much was it the Republic's fault, especially when there's a shadowy man at the center of it all. So that's why I'm excited. It really felt like this. We're going to dangle this in front of you. It's a big question. It's a big emotional question. It's a big plotty question. We're going to deal with forgiveness.
Yeah. 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 Anyway, okay. I was going to say some other things, but I'm going to save them for later as the story reveals itself. Do you want to move on to how this episode reflected bigger story, morality, perspective of Star Wars?
Yeah, perfect transition point for me. I was going to bring up compassion and understanding again, which was kind of an undercurrent theme for me, but it ties into the bigger kind of morality and perspective of Star Wars, of just the simple stuff of seeking different solutions, but seeing beyond yourself. I've mentioned Wrecker is like one of my favorites, and it's because I'm Wrecker at times. I'm generally good-hearted, but I always, like my father before me, battle my gut reaction of just thinking of my own story first, not even of myself first, but I'm hungry. You're offering me food. Thanks. And it sometimes I need someone to go, but that person's hungry too. Oh yeah, you're right. You're right. Totally. Didn't think about that. And that is about not just compassion. It's just understanding of the entire situation and the people in front of you. And therefore you can find a better solution to move forward. And Omega kind of uses all that in the end with the dragon, understands the dragon, understands where they're coming from, their home, and they're hungry, and they're just sleeping, by the way. We just keep chasing them, and use compassion to solve the problem and save Hunter, by the way. On the other side, you got Rampart and Tarkin, because you got an Imperial that shows compassion. He's shot in the chest, and Tarkin's like, hey, looks like you lost one of your guys, and Rampart's like, yeah, things are good. Just no compassion, cold, icy, no understanding, and there's the two sides, and that's kind of big Star Wars stuff for me.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely great. I would say that's, you know, selfless versus selfish, right? As soon as it's pointed out to Wrecker that you are being selfish, like, oh, right, my bad, take the ration bar.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't even have a bed. Right, I'll work on that. compared to, one of them died, who cares? Yep. That's what they're for. Yeah, really, really good point. I think for me, the big thing is just this idea of change. And I think this is going to come up a lot. You know, yeah. This goes back to, in terms of Star Wars themes, goes, you know, back to Shmi telling Anakin, you can't stop the change anymore. They can stop the suns from setting. And this is such a time of upheaval, of change for the entire galaxy, and right, everyone having to adapt. So I like that as a story of change for the whole galaxy and individuals. And in this episode in particular, we saw, I think, the people coded as the good guys trying to find ways to adapt, right?
Yeah.
Bad Batch is adapting. Like, well, we don't get to be at home on Kamino anymore, but let's make the ship feel like home. Let's make Omega feel like that she's truly a part of us. Omega trying to step up and be a fighter in the field and figure out how that works. Even Saw Gerrera's fighters and refugees are adapting. They're responding to what's going on, and they're changing. They're trying to find new home, and they're redirecting their purpose and all that. And then all of the people kind of coded as bad to maybe bad. the Empire. I mean, you can say that the Stormtrooper program is changed, but it's really just like, how do we implement this thing that exists, that currently exists, in the best, most brutal way? But then the Kaminoans, or Kaminoans, however you choose to say it, are actively resisting change, right? They're like, there's no way. There's no thought of like, well, we can diversify our business or find another client. Like, no, we have to keep things the way they are, and we will do anything to anyone. I felt that scene implied.
Yeah.
At the end, we can talk more about that. But there was a real like, no, this is our business. This is the model. This is the client. Will produce a different kind of clone so we can keep things the way they are. Crosshair, you know, it might not be his responsibility, but he is really, you know, going through the motions, resisting change. It's just more missions, and he's going on them.
Yeah, great stuff. And ominous stuff with the Kevin Owens for me. Like, on the second viewing, the first viewing, I'm like, oh, they're going to undercut the Empire, and that might be their undoing. We don't have, we're wishing for the best for Kamino. it might be dark times ahead, but then at the end, and especially on my second viewing, you're right. I'm willing to see where Lama Sue and the team can go, but there's a very ominous nature to things you're talking about. Like, it's less about, oh, the Empire seems to be doing bad, but what can we do to make more really highly trained killer clones?
Oh yeah, there. I would say would be zero examination of the moral impact.
Yeah.
It was just this is our business. Yep. We've always printed envelopes, and we're going to continue to print envelopes somehow. Like, it was just it's business.
This is the phone book company. We're going to keep printing.
Do people not need phone books anymore? We will find a way for them to need phone books. Yeah. Only other big thing for me, we already talked about, is I feel like this show is going to continue to tell us the long-awaited clones versus stormtroopers story in its entirety, and I'm so excited for that.
I'm really excited for it. I just to finally get this, and we always talk about that transition period. We joke about it with suddenly the uniforms, the new ships, and everything, but to actually see it work, to see Tarkin front and center, and as he kind of passes the baton to Rampart, which I think you're right, will be kind of maybe the main kind of big bad behind a lot of things here. I'm really intrigued by that, just to get some answers and see where it plays out.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other thoughts before we take a quick break?
No, that is some big themes. Big themes here. Easy. Forgiveness, it's so easy. You just got
ton of great ideas, but also a ton of great details, and we will be back in just a moment to dive into all those details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back to finish our discussion of Bad Batch Episode 3, Replacements. I almost said The Replacements. That's a band. Anyway, let's talk about some of our favorite moments, Ken. We always start with action moments. Did you have some favorite action moments in this pretty dark episode?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you know the Mats are like one of my favorite bands from Minnesota, too. So I got really excited. I was like, finally, a documentary on Paul Westerberg and Star Wars. But no, not to be. So interesting. I wrote down this. Since most of the action was brutal, it was very hard for me to list. and normally I like, I'm okay with it. I'm a Star Wars fan. Pew, pew, pew. I can separate the impact and just the fun of it all. But yeah, there was some great shooting, some great fighting. But man, it was dark and very powerful. So I especially on my second viewing where I usually make notes on this particular section, I was like, man, I don't want to accidentally celebrate it in any way.
Right. I will celebrate how well the story of horror was told, right?
Yes.
And it is a distinction because a part of the reason we have this this segment of favorite action moment is because a part of Star Wars is the whiz bang fun. And a lot of times when we discuss an episode of Clone Wars, it's like, oh, look at that cool thing Obi-Wan did with his lightsaber. And it is about a celebration of the fun and the spectacle and the thrill of the action.
Totally.
And that was not the intent of the creators.
No.
This episode. This was not supposed to be thrilling or fist pumping. This was supposed to be horrifying, and it was extremely effective and successful at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Shout out to the team putting this together, because it was one of just that. I told you that shot of just seeing those the four refugees left, it was really effective. It was it was execution squad style, and you don't see that a lot in Star Wars. There might be other examples here and there, but it was one of the ones that was most front and center for me.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of the vibe from Force Awakens when we just see the troopers firing on, yep, on the village.
Yep.
Even more horrible because the way it was set up. So within the horror, within fully acknowledging that we are not celebrating it like cool action moment, there are some moments that I thought were effective and I enjoyed,
right,
from that perspective. The pseudo imperial stormtrooper, mm-hmm, proto imperial stormtrooper, flame trooper.
Yeah,
that was great to see the flame troopers of all eras coming together. And extra horrible, right? That image of there's civilians and there's the flame trooper flaming away.
Yeah.
The other shot that I thought was particularly effective was there was the person who was shot in the back by the Imperials. And then their rocket goes off and shoots off, and it illuminates this sort of weird temple-like structure.
Mm.
So that little sequence I thought was great because it was the person's running away from you, shooting in the back, extra brutal. The rocket goes off was this sort of like, look, just unintended consequences of, violence upon violence. And then the fact that, like, it illuminates this old temple-like structure, it's just kind of great classic Star Wars visuals. But for me, it really emphasized, like, look, this is a place of history, and maybe that temple-like structure at some place used to be a place of reverence, and now there's just this horrible violence going on around here. I thought that was a really effective sequence.
It's a great pull, the dark cloud of the Empire truly stomping over the galaxy now.
Yeah. Any other action moments for you? Outside of that horror fest.
Yeah, no, and a very effective one for sure. I put this, Omega picking up the blaster and going forward was its own kind of real positive, you know, belonging, acceptance, purpose, strength, bravery, action. It was a good moment for me, and even better, she solves the problem in a different way. But the music swells. It's a hero moment in its way, and I really like that. It's similar to other action moments we've talked about, and even the Clone Wars, that aren't giant, big 3PO planning a party. It's its own kind of action. This was its own kind of action to me.
Yeah, it's a good fist pumping moment for sure. In terms of action, just kind of shots, the way things were constructed, I really liked the shot when Hunter was getting closer to the opening to the tunnel that led to the Ordo Moondragon's home. And we'd only seen the quick horror movie glimpses, and then those big claws just grabbing the opening of the tunnel.
Yeah.
That shot of the claws coming up first was so great. Then the face roaring, and then I liked how it was like, it was too fast for Hunter to do anything about it. It was just on him.
Yeah.
But specific shot of like, here comes the monster was really great.
It comes. By the way, this is similar to co-owning a Chihuahua that likes mommy more than you. it explodes fast. It explodes fast. Yeah.
Last thing I put down for an action moment, which is maybe stretching it, but Wrecker hitting his head was really effective. I could feel that. Just the way it was done with the shaking and the crack. And I think the fact that they have set him up to be really strong, to be like, ooh, if that hurt his head, that was really bad.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I've been battling a little bit of a minor sickness this week. And so I got a little bit of aches. And so when I see that stuff, when I feel sick, I feel extra, there's one little bed, which is what I did most yesterday. So, yes. Sorry, Wrecker. I feel you.
Yeah, strap in your bed. So let's talk about moments of comedy, whimsy, weirdness. Did you have some favorites here?
Yeah, I guess I just have to admit this. I guess I'm just a big fan of Gonk Droid humor. Gonky, which I believe is the official name of this droid now.
In the StarWars.com databank, yes, Gonky.
Gonky. I just love Omega kind of using him as a pillow, and I'm glad we got a Gonk Droid for the ride.
Absolutely great. And a treat of the subtitles is when they're crashing and the Gonk Droid Gonky is sliding, the subtitles say droid honking.
I trust you got a good freeze frame of that.
Yes. Which is like honking.
That's great.
Technically, yes. But is it gonking or is it making a different kind of noise in this moment of terror?
I love that there's a person putting together the closed captions that just, I heard honking. It's honking. I heard honking.
I don't care if it's called a Gonk Droid. It's honking now.
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent choice. Gonky in general.
Mm-hmm.
Other moments for you?
I love after the end of the crash landing when Omega says, is it over? Which is just kind of, all of us the last year or so. Is it over? Big question mark on that sentence, but we're hoping.
Yeah. Can we have cocktails indoors? Yeah. Yeah. Tech was a standout yet again, yes. Quickly becoming one of my favorite characters. I really liked at the beginning when they are beginning to crash land and Tech is trying to say, like, the critical systems are all fine. And Hunter says, yeah, getting thrown out of hyperspace seems pretty critical to me. And then Tech says, it's not affecting life support. We're fine. It's extremely effective.
Yeah, the big book of Tech is the companion piece we need out of this. I enjoyed the Echo moment. What was that, Tech? I'm a little busy at the moment. Yep, you are.
Yeah. And then the Wrecker, it was a big swing joke, but it really worked for me. Though, we're going to die, we're going to die. Then looking over at the child, we're going to be fine. We're going to be fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes those jokes are like, that's really a clear joke. But I think, again, it's kind of clear, simple jokes work for me better when there is a little bit of darkness, which ties them to reality. And the fact that Wrecker is used to just honestly behaving like a big baby, because you got the vibe that he says this all the time, that anytime there's a problem, he's like, oh, we're gonna die. And the sudden realization that he can't be a big baby anymore made it funny to me.
Yeah, is he like, what's his name, an alien? Game over, man. Game over.
Exactly. So that one really worked for me. Anything else for you?
I wrote down, what was it here? Oh, another Tech line. Just looking at the scratches on the ship. Well, those weren't there, but we landed. Just book a Tech, man. Book a Tech.
The other Tech line that I wrote down is, I don't think it was really meant to be a comedy line necessarily, just an accurate character line, but it amused me, is they're discussing what's going on with the creature, and he is looking at, like, the little data screen on his wrist that he's constantly checking in on, his little wrist internet there, and says, the creature is most likely an Ordo Moon Dragon. And it was like this great meta moment of like, oh, Tech is on the StarWars.com databank. Tech is on Wikipedia.
Tech is us looking for answers before you start a podcast.
It really felt that way. I'm not saying that the writers did it as a meta joke or anything like that, but it feels like if Tech could do this all the time, if Tech could be like just anything that comes up of like, Fennec Shand, here's all the information that we know about her in canon up to this point, you know, and just read it out. Yeah. Just read it out, Tech. Thank you.
Yeah, you're right. We're about 3 for 3 on episodes now of Tech going, this is Saw Gerrera. You might remember him from appearances in Star Wars Rebels episode 10.
In this episode, he's voiced by. Yeah, absolutely great. Another line for me that is not intended as a comedy line, but I put this under whimsy because I know you and I are both enjoying it. It's Tarkin's line. The clone trooper program is a cost prohibitive relic of the past, but until the time is right, it will continue to serve a purpose.
Yeah.
And it is this great picture of Tarkin still feels like a mythic villain from a fable, but his role within this fable is to be like the evil board member of a cruel corporation, you know, where to use a phrase like cost prohibitive, you know, that's his only concern here is great character building.
It's the Rogue One stuff with him and Credic is still some of my favorite because it's a battle of middle management and it really hits home for a lot of us and Tarkin being on the upper tier of that top tier management and just hearing some of these logistics and the evilness behind it. It's been its own kind of whimsy and comedy inside the darkness.
Yeah. And I think for me, it is a part of the Star Wars tradition, the Star Wars story that, you know, efficiency and turning a profit, there's nothing inherently wrong with those things. Mm-hmm. But when greed becomes a big part of it. Greed, such a huge theme to Lucas that he talks about a lot in interviews. It has the shadows of that, of Tarkin just being, he didn't have a tragic moment where he fell to the dark side. It's not a cosmic thing. He is a cruel person who believes in order and his supremacy at all costs. But he wants to keep those costs down, if at all possible.
If at all possible. Yeah, no, the story of Tarkin, I mean, the Lucino book is worth a reread or just kind of a scan through. It's the building blocks of Tarkin and competition, you know, you win or you die type of mentality, and how it all flows into, like I mentioned up top, of just him dying on that Death Star. It all builds towards that. I love what they're doing with the Tarkin stuff.
Absolutely. I did feel a little bit of a pang that it felt like maybe he is taking a step back now, and it's going to be Rampart's show.
Yeah, he is. I'm looking forward to more with Rampart, but yeah, you get that feeling. And, you know, obviously Stephen Stanton does a great job with that Tarkin character, that voice, but I love a good Tarkin. He'll mosey on by when he needs to.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's dive into then, unless you have any more, canon lore connections to other stories.
Quick one, just a great music.
Oh, yeah.
It's whimsy, it's magical, great music cue on Omega, kind of using the flashlight in the dragon's home. Just great job on Kevin Kiner, which is, you know, you could take for granted how good he is on these shows. But yeah, I really was affected by that one.
Yeah, absolutely. And in general, creating a great and different tone that is matching, I think, this sort of a darker world that still has some hope in it.
I love looking at Yoda's theme as the sounds of enlightenment that had that kind of connection. But I think I even like what you said there more of just like hope in a dark place. It really, really did a good job.
Yeah, nice. All right, let's move on then to canon and lore connections to other stories. I just want to start with, I think, one of the big ones, because I think it's something that people have been waiting for since 2016, which is something from that Rogue One list of projects that Jin rattles off, finally getting featured. Project War Mantle. How did you feel hearing that, and what did you take it to actually be?
What did I take it to be? That's a great question. Cause definitely, I want to hear more. I don't know. You caught me for a loop there. I don't think I was really picking that one out there. I think is it just getting stormtroopers in cooler armor?
Yeah. It sounded like I took it that War Mantle is specifically this project where they would get recruits or volunteers from across the galaxy who are already, you know, trained in some way,
right?
Who are already kind of elite troopers, but then pair them with clone commanders, and right, those would be little units of, they'd be led by these experienced clones, but they'd be these elite, human non-cloned troops.
Yeah,
that right, seemed to me what it was saying, but it felt like that there was also room for maybe there is more to the War Mantle project.
It could just be that the visors are green. And switching out all the visors to green. No, I'm with you on that one there. Now that I stop and think about that one. What I should do, because I missed that. I got to tell you, I missed that. I should just go to Rogue One, write down all the projects, and just see where they pop up again.
Well, I have the list right in front of me from my book of studying for trivia, and I think that's a part of it for me. I would not have necessarily recognized it. I would have maybe been like, oh. But I think it's because I have, at various points for Star Wars trivia, memorized those Imperial plans. I've been waiting for it to pop up is one of the questions on Schmodown in particular of, please name three other projects that were listed, you know? So it was really fun to finally hear them. And over the years, we, and I'm sure many other Star Wars podcasters have gotten that question of, when are we going to hear more? We just got a question a little while back about Blacksaber. What is that project? So right, it was really great to just finally pick up on that breadcrumb.
It's great. Good pull.
And I'm very excited to see if it is as simple as what Rampart presented in this episode, which was pairing volunteer trooper recruits with clones, or if there's more to Project War Mantle. Okay. I did want to highlight also, Ken, this line that we already talked about, but this trooper, ES-01, saying, with the Empire, I get paid, I get fed, and I have a roof over my head, more than the Republic ever did for me. How did you take that? Did you take that as somebody who was in the Republic but resented them, or did it cross your mind that this was a separatist?
That's a good point. I didn't go with that. But I did. I made a note of this. Of just, this is another moment to toss into that debate of, they're all the same, and how Star Wars is maybe fighting against that. that kind of conversation that you and I've been talking about of at a certain point, I can see what y'all mean, but really light, dark, make a choice. And you have choices along the way. Palpatine's tracking that, all that kind of stuff. I took it as that, but also that does make sense just on a great kind of plotty logistical standpoint of, you know, if you had a negative view of the Republic, and we're on the outside and who knows, you know, it would make sense. They'd be pulling from the separatists. So yeah. Ooh, yeah. I like that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe not. That's just that was a wild thing, but I thought that was a really intriguing, line and intriguing perspective, not just the like, kind of real world of like, look, I signed up because I need these things and the army provides them, right? That's a real thing that can happen. But then in the world of Star Wars, this resentment towards the Republic, like more than the Republic ever did for me, it feels like this individual fell for what the Empire is saying. The kind of the trains are going to run on timeline lie of like, yeah, we're going to limit your freedoms a little bit, but everything's going to be so smooth and perfect now.
Yeah, I'm going to get I'll get real world and deep. So my grandfather who passed away 2 years ago, Circassian, were Russian, essentially, though not technically Russian, which is part of the problem. He fought in World War II. He was captured. His fellow Russian soldiers beat him up in prison. He beat them up. And therefore, my grandfather was press ganged into the Nazi army and had no choice but to fight. And when first chance, 2 years in, I think he escaped in a battle and was taken in by Allied forces and then could not return to the Soviet Union at the end of the war. That's why my father was born on the way to America. Little life story of the Knapsack family. When talking about it, Joseph, and talking about his experience there, other than just kind of the overall general horrors of war, he said it was the best thing. Again, he would at gunpoint was forced to join, to be clear, a little bit more to that story. But he said they treated the us so well in that Nazi army. It was a life of luxury compared to what I had been in, where I had to fight for my own boots in the Russian army and didn't have the supplies. It felt like a life of luxury. And that hit me in this episode a bit, to get deep and to get real. It just kind of that lie. That's why that debate of, they're all the same, or the trappings of, you know, I understand where the stormtrooper might be coming from. You know, hey, what if he was a separatist or was here? But then it's a slippery slope. And thankful to say, about 2 years in, it was a battle. He fled, and thankful for it because that's why I'm here and that's why they came over to America. But yeah, so interesting story. It did hit deep. It's a powerful discussion point.
Yeah, that's a powerful story. And I think for me, my mind goes to even the possibility of separatists because I'm hungry to have more storytelling of people who are just, you know, people, not, you know, droid generals or Sith lords, but the peoples, like, I've been against the Republic for a long time and now the Republic is gone and it's this better government. Great. Sign me up.
Yeah.
So I'm interested in it. But what I love about you telling this incredible and powerful story about your grandfather is that constant reminder that Star Wars is a huge galaxy and there's room for tons of complexity, right?
Yeah.
So even though I'm intrigued by separatist, you know, it's not like, hey, the entire galaxy is separatist or they were with the Republic. And the idea that this could have been somebody who, he lived on a Republic world, but there's infighting in his world and the Republic favored the people that, the civil war on his planet favored the people on his side. Like you're talking about, your grandfather going through that of like, I'm in the Russian army, but there's other Russians who don't like me because blah, 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 you know, it's a great reminder that Star Wars is capable of that complexity too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great discussion going forward is this big switch in the Republic separatists and all the one, and, you know, Cassian Andor's family coming from separatists. There's this big, wonderful, like you said, complex conversations to have from this little funny space war.
Yeah, exactly. And just kind of stripping away the labels and judging the various groups by their actual actions and intentions, like what happens to this poor guy.
Yeah.
I got a couple more here on the canon and lore, but I want to bat it to you to see if you have any that you wanted to be sure to discuss.
Yeah. There was that little moment of the hyperspace going red, white, right when the things go wrong and they're pulled out. And that's something that keeps showing up, in High Republic and other areas of Star Wars, where it's just something you didn't think about as a kid. It's blue. And then when it turns red right before problems happen. And it's just always like that little detail popping up now.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great. Yeah. Other things that you wanted to highlight?
Just the Ordo Moondragon, which we can talk about more of if you want to, but it's to me yet another Star Wars creature that loves eating metal, like we said up top. And just the tradition of Minox, a lot of stuff in Clone Wars, or just, hell, even the Purgles just being able to jump through hyperspace. It's just very organic doing something that we might think is normally mechanical. And I just Ordo Moondragon wanting some energy. Just come on, just want an energy bar. It's an energy bar.
Yeah, it's even shaped like your rations. Come on, be understandable.
Come on.
Yeah, so Ordo Moondragon, thank you, Tech, for reading its Wikipedia entry. I looked it up, Ordo Moondragon, new Ordo itself. It's a Mandalorian world located within the galaxy, says Wikipedia. Looks like there is that book that was written by Pablo Hidalgo, Scum and Villainy, Case Files, and the Galaxy's Most Notorious. There was a little bit of a Dryden Voss story having to do with Ordo, and Ordo is mentioned back in the old Knights of the Old Republic video game. But the moon, since that's all the planet Ordo, the moon appears to be its own thing, which is cool. Couple other things for me. It's always just fun to see the ration bars and to just see like, oh, those got established in Empire Strikes Back. I always think of those as the Dagobah ration bars and feel they should sell these at Galaxy's Edge. It's great to see them. A small thing is, the plot. Last week, the ship took off from Slukamai and got peppered with blaster bolts, which we've seen many a time in Star Wars. And it was fun to know, like, yeah, you know, that can actually hurt a ship. Like, all the times that we've seen people shoot ships as they take off, like, every once in a while, it's actually going to work. It's a pretty great twist on canon.
Love that. I love that.
Yeah. And then the last big one I wanted to talk about is what's going on with the Kaminoans, right? Mm-hmm. Do we get a good old name check of Jango Fett, that his sample is degrading? That's something that had been established, so it's great that they picked up on that. And that they want to keep their contract with this new empire, develop a superior clone, the next step. And they need only one of the enhanced clones to create this new superior clone. So it's a great canon moment connecting all that, moving us into the future. But how did you take all of that? Why do you think they need just one enhanced clone? Why not Crosshair? What are your thoughts?
It's funny. I think, because definitely we got something bigger going on with Omega, without a doubt. We're going to find all that out as it slowly unfolds. And I thought, you know, is Omega the result of them already taking stuff from the Bad Batch, which maybe, you know, a lot of people are remarking on S.H.I.E.L.D. copycat, whatever they're doing, you know, can I learn that skill? Oh, I'll track doing that. That's already shown up. So I went there first, and then, I kind of thought of like, well, let's just, you could get Crosshair, but then you definitely this dangling threat of those ones aren't going to come back willingly, so unless there's an entire another squadron, which by the way, another squad here, Scar Squadron, Inferno Squad, give me all the squads. I want to rank squads later on, so I have no problem with that. But I think it definitely has to do with the Bad Batch making them the good batch, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely took it. It was Bad Batch. It was another great sort of image that told the story, but reminded you of this idea of home to see their empty mess hall table.
Right.
But I think this idea that, well, in saying that, like, well, they're not going to return willingly, but we only need one of them. I took that as, this is total just guessing at this point. But if they feel like, well, Crosshair is valuable to us because he's active, he's working, and maybe whatever process they need is gonna kill the clone,
right,
or like they have to be hooked up to a machine, or they're gonna chop them to bits in order to do this, that this is not just like, hey, thanks for the DNA sample, otherwise they could just use Crosshair.
I wonder if something to the fact of two of them don't want to use Crosshair because the Empire won't, and they need it. It's all secret too. They want to keep their business going. I agree with you on that Crosshair for X, Y, and Z reasons is unavailable for the project.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And there's definitely huge questions about Omega, but just the way that conversation was phrased, it wasn't like we need the one, you know, we need the girl back. It seemed much more like they needed just like, Tech, Wrecker, Hunter, we don't really care. We just need one of those enhanced clones.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, Omega is an enhanced clone, so maybe her too. But that was a great scene and a great bit of canon to wonder about for the future.
Yep.
Was there anything that you disliked or questioned in this episode, Ken?
No, other than you know, it was really affecting. So I'm looking forward to like Wrecker's birthday party episode or something, just kind of to clear the palate.
Yeah. Nothing I disliked or questioned. The only thing that I was like antsy for, I feel like if Tech took the time to ask Omega a lot of direct questions.
Yes.
I feel like she knows more about the inhibitor chip and more about what's going on. Mm-hmm. On Kamino, in the possibility of what this next iteration of clones that the Kaminoans are talking about. I feel like she maybe knows, because every time that the Bad Batch is kind of talking about something, she pipes up and says something very clear and, you know, very direct.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's almost this comedy coming where Tech's like, you know, does a bunch of reporting, and she's like, oh yeah, no, let me spill it all out for you, because I know.
Just ask.
Yeah. Just ask, Tech. Which they already played that joke, but it feels like there's more there.
Totally.
What are your hopes for the next episode or two, Ken?
You know, now you got me. I'll tell you what, you got me thinking of it. If Ordo has anything to do with Dryden Vos, they're leaving that moon. We don't know how far they got. I don't know. Maybe they get trapped. Maybe Dryden Vos is like, hey, I need some help. And maybe that begins maybe some Fennec Shand interactions or something like that. I do like the idea of them not finding purpose in the criminal underworld, but needing to survive underneath the radar screen and what that means. So I'm looking forward to, like I said up top, I love the serialized nature. I love the slow burn. I'm also excited to get a big thing. If it's truly 16 episode season, episode 4, give me something big to spurn the, you know, action in the next few episodes.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. Very similar things. I'm very curious to get to Fennec Shand since she's been teased. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's been some great discussion around Omega of, you know, if she is unaltered, which is just a possibility, not anything verified in any way, like, does she have any sort of possibility of connection to Boba Fett, even just emotionally, you know, down the road? And the fact that we do have Fennec Shand in this show, and Fennec Shand is going to be in the Book of Boba Fett. I almost said the Big Book of Boba Fett. That's a coffee table book. That there is, I am intrigued, not in a like clickbaity, here's how they all connect, here are the secrets, but like, what is the emotional connection between these people? What is the possibility right now for interesting emotional and thematic connections between this moment of the beginning of the Empire and that Book of Boba Fett story, which is, you know, after the fall of the Empire?
Oh, I like that. That's tasty.
Yeah, so curious to get to that. And then I feel like maybe the next couple episodes of this for the Bad Batch themselves might have a little bit of that Mandalorian vibe of like, we're just trying to keep everything moving forward. Like, if their ship needs repairs, or they need money, or they need fake chain codes, I feel like they're going to kind of need have a couple more missions to be like, these are just our basics we need to function. If that's going to be, they take a job with Fennec Shand or that kind of thing. But I do hope within the next couple episodes, because the Bad Batch is used to having missions, and because this we left Crosshair behind thing is going on, I feel like it should be moving toward them eventually going, we have a mission, it's get Crosshair.
Yeah, I really liked it. Almost like this double mission. Like, Crosshair and his squad are hunting them down, and they're trying to hunt Crosshair down to save them. And then the, you know, Kaminoans are in the middle of it trying to capture one of them to get their business going. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. And you mentioned this as well, but I'm really enjoying the what is Omega's deal. But in this particular episode, I think really sharpened and focused to what is her enhanced ability in specific.
Right.
And the mirroring is really interesting, because I did like those moments in the pilot where she did literally mirror Hunter a couple times. And I felt like it was just like trying to learn from him, you know, or being, you know, interested to see, oh, is this what you behave like? But I'd be very interested to see what the enhanced ability is and excited for that in future episodes. Yeah. Is there anything that we have not talked about, Ken, that you wanted to touch on in this episode of Bad Batch?
I put a note here about the Lamassu. What's the deal with Lamassu? But we hit on it a lot. But that's another thing I'm looking forward to, just seeing it slowly develop. What's going on there, and the fate of Kamino. Again, we joke, but we don't have high hopes for the fate of Kamino.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's not going to go well, but exactly how it's not going to go well is really, really intriguing. Yeah. I mean, wouldn't it be amazing if the story had been, you know, we all expected the Imperial shut them down, but maybe the Bad Batch, without, you know, hurting any of the clones, shuts the operation down.
Shut it down.
Yeah, that would be a twist. The only thing that I wanted to mention is I love that vibe at the beginning when Omega is just, you know, being a kid, leaning back on the gonk droid like kids do. Mm-hmm. But it made me want to know, what is she reading or watching on her data pad?
Yeah,
because it really had a kid vibe of like, what, you know, I'm watching my shows, or I'm reading a comic book, or I'm playing Candy Crush or whatever. Fruit Ninja. What is she playing on?
I think she's watching TikToks of Lulilo Primock singing, just some good old fashioned entertainment.
Lulilo Primock TikToks. Say that 10 times fast. All right, Ken, our final question, always on the Bad Batch Report, is if you could have an action figure or any toy inspired by this episode, what would you want?
Well, you just touched upon it. I want a gonk droid pillow with movable legs. So it's soft. It's maybe a plush. It's a pillow, but the legs are maybe a hard plastic, and they just, when you lay on it, the legs start to kick.
Beautiful. Perfect. Yes. Please send them to our homes right now. We want them. I was inspired by the Ordo Moondragon. When I was a kid, I had this really weird toy that was a goat that could eat. It came with like all this little plastic food. And what you did was it had a jaw and you pumped its tail it masticated. The mouth went up and down and you could feed like a trail of wieners.
Yeah,
into the goat by pumping the tail. And then you could, not anatomically accurate to how eating works, open the goat's stomach and take your hot dogs back out. And I want an Ordo Moondragon with that kind of eating action. You can just feed it, you know, the capacitors.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Oh, gosh. There's a lot. I want that. There's a lot going on there.
Pump the tail, make the Ordo Moondragon eat, you know, for kids. Hours of fun. While you are reclining on your gonk droid walking pillow. All right, that is our big look at Chapter 3, Episode 3, Replacements of the Bad Batch Report. Ken, do you want to let people know where they can find us?
I would love to. We are on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. You can find us on Facebook at Force Center Podcast. You can get an audiobook on us by going to audibletrial.com/Force Center. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. You can follow me on Twitter at Ken Napsok, or go to my website, KenNapsok.com, for more. And Joseph, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on the old internet, on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. And if you want to catch up on all my other comedy adventures, you can find them all on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Gonky the Gonk Droid, this has been the Bad Batch Report.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.